From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Say the word farming, and what comes to mind? Here in Illinois, endless rows of corn and soy, of course. Also, maybe a quiet, more traditional way of life? But the story of agriculture in the last 100 years is the story of intense innovation in technology and practices. Like in so many other industries, automation has become the next frontier in agricultural technology. And this week in Decatur, Illinois, farmers from Illinois and the greater Midwest are getting together at the Farm Progress Show to see the latest and greatest. Joining us now to discuss the present and future of farming automation are Girish Chowdhury, who's Associate Professor of Agricultural and Biological Engineering and Computer Science at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, also the Chief Scientist at the Illinois Autonomous Farm. Girish, welcome to the 21st.
Thank you so much, Brian.
And Dominic Wachis is here, Director of Strategic Initiatives for Raven Applied Technology, a manufacturer of agricultural products based in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Dominic, thank you for joining us as well.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Willie Vogt, Editorial Director for Farm Progress. Willie, thank you for being here. Good morning.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
Listeners, as always, our lines are open, 800-222-9455. We'd especially like to hear from farmers and those who work in ag. How much do you rely on automation technology? Where do you see the far future of farming going? Or if you have a question for any of our guests, you can always call us, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21st Show. So, Willie, I'm going to begin with you. You're on the ground at the Farm Progress Show. What are you seeing and hearing about farm automation this year?
Well, I'd like to back up a little bit. We talk about farm automation like it's all robots, and it's not, although it will be eventually, as Dominic can tell us. But the thing about automation has changed so much is that today you can sit in a tractor, plant 200 acres of corn, and never touch the steering wheel. You need to be in that tractor for that reason. But the value of automation is it's reduced fatigue in the way I farm. I can farm more acres more efficiently and be safer at the way I do my job. And the automation there, that's just in driving a tractor. We look at the automation in other ways of gathering data and information. It's pretty exciting out here.
What does that actually look like in practice? Is the modern farmer surfing his or her iPhone or reading a book as they're doing this? Or do you have to sort of still keep an eye on things and make sure the machine is doing what it's supposed to be doing?
The exciting thing is that, well, there may be some surfing. I'm not going to go into that. But I think the exciting thing is that when you're driving a tractor, you're usually pulling something that's doing something. It's a planter, it may be a sprayer, it may be a piece of tillage equipment. If I have to concentrate less on looking forward, I can look backward at how that machine is working and make sure it's working right in the field, whether the planter rows are doing well. Yes, I get reported data on my monitor, but I can also see things are lined up right and everything's working. So I find that farmers like auto steering and the automation tools they have because it allows them to do a better job. Other places we see automation in a combine, for example, you know, today's combine doesn't look any different, much different than the combine from 10 years ago. But inside that combine is a whole lot of automation technology in terms of auto calibration, auto changing sieves and rotors so that the grain sample is always clean. There's just a lot of tools that are being put to work here.
Dominic, I want to bring you into the conversation. You're Director of Strategic Initiatives for Raven Applied Technology. This week at the Farm Progress Show, you're debuting some new autonomous technology, I understand, OmniDrive and OmniPower. Can you talk a little bit about them?
Absolutely. Yeah, our Omni brand is something that we're really excited about and have gone through launching over the course of this year. Our OmniDrive solution was on display. Harvesting crop, and it's really a solution that removes the operator or driver from the harvest cart so that a combine operator can automatically and fully autonomously hail the cart whenever it's needed. And so we've seen a lot of interest in that platform. And then our OmniPower solution really brings the spreading and spraying applications into the fully autonomous space as well. So really excited about the products that we have launched thus far and where things are going in the future.
I'm going to try and dumb this down for, or maybe, you know, for those of us who are not steeped in the ways of farming, this is the combine is there sort of doing the harvesting. It takes the grain, and you need to have under, you know, non-autonomous circumstances, at least two people doing this job, one driving the combine, one driving a tractor, pulling a trailer next to it. And what you're saying is that trailer that collects the grain, that could be automated now or is autonomous under this system.
That's correct.
Yep. Okay. All right. So let's turn now to Girish Chowdhury. You're the chief scientist at the Illinois Autonomous Farm. What is the Illinois Autonomous Farm?
So the Illinois Autonomous Farm is a test bed for new technologies. And there's a number of scientists working there. And our goal is to create more options for farmers, new technology options that farmers could use. And also to improve the current options that are out there, so such as the automated tractors and other things. So it was established 2 years ago as a collaboration between the Ag and Bioengineering Department and the Center for Digital Agriculture, which is a cross-disciplinary center. It includes the College of ACES and the Granger College of Engineering together. And we have a number of scientists working there to test out some of these new technologies.
Can you give us a visual? What's growing there? How big is it? And what would someone see there if they stop by on an average weekday?
Yeah, so it's basically, currently it's about 10 acres of land, which is situated in the much larger parcel of land, 2,500 acres or so in the South Farms at the University of Illinois. And we're growing currently, of course, maize and soybean. And also we have some there's a little polyculture there that we're building up, and that's going to have perennials as well as some annuals. And there are smaller portions of what we call urban gardens that are automated with robots. And those are supposed to be really for urban, semi-urban areas where you can farm from farther away. So basically, we're looking at, you know, the future. What's the future of farming, right? We're thinking about more diverse farms that scale from very small to very large and still remain profitable, farms that are far more sustainable, use much lesser chemical inputs than what we use today, and to a large scale automated, but also that autonomy is to a level where you can rely on it and have the farmers step away from the farms.
Wow, fascinating stuff. All right, let me take a moment to reintroduce my guests. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the Farm Progress Show, which is taking place this week in Decatur, and specifically about some of the autonomous technology on exhibit there and what is next, where we've been and where we're going in terms of as I jokingly said earlier, the self-farming farm. We're speaking with Professor Girish Chowdhury, who's from the University of Illinois. He's chief scientist at the Illinois Autonomous Farm. Dominic Wachis, who's director of strategic initiatives for Raven Applied Technology, and Willie Vogt, editorial director for Farm Progress. And Willie, let me ask you, so you mentioned earlier, you still have to be in the cab. To what level is farming presently automated? What are some of the limitations on that right now?
I think, and maybe Girish and Dominic could deal with this too, but the limitation is moving the machine and leaving the machine to do its job. Those are things that we're still working out. So we brought automation to such a high level in the current newest equipment that you can buy that the next step is to take the driver out of the cab. So I think that what we're looking at is, what does that look like in terms of how does that tractor get to that field, or is it a tractor that just stays in that area? Is that, how does that combine move? But once it's there, how does it work? And then the other side of it is, and the part of agriculture that a lot of people have to understand is, you have a tractor in the field that's spraying or planting. You have to keep that planter full of seed and fertilizer. You have to keep that sprayer full of crop protection products. That means it needs to be tended. So how does that automated machine stay full so it can keep working and doing its job? So the OmniPower system, which Dominic's heavily involved with, is fascinating because it's a full-size piece of equipment. This is not some small test machine. It's running a full-size new leader spreader, for example. It runs. When it's out, it's got to stop and somebody's got to come and fill it. But it can go run, and maybe I can run manage six of them in six different fields, and I can have one person tend six machines rather than, you know, different operators in all those machines. As that evolves, I think that's going to be pretty exciting.
Wow. It almost sounds like the, you know, what the Air Force does with mid-air refueling or something, right? You have the machines out there and you can just have the one sort of tanker go from unit to unit tending, as you said. Okay. Dominic, let me ask you, what are some of the challenges with automating farm implements, right? How does that, we've heard a lot about the challenges with self-driving cars and trucks, you know, it's cameras and things like that, being able to distinguish from an orange cone and a pedestrian, that sort of thing. What are the challenges with automating farm implements?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think Willie led into a number of those areas as well, but I'd break it into two pieces. The first is really moving the piece of equipment around. And so you have propulsion and sensors and cameras and things to see the surrounding environment that are really important. But you can't lose sight of the fact that at the end of the day, that machine's in the field to do a job for an agronomic output. And so that's really what matters most to our customers, and where we're focused on delivering the entire solution, not just a machine that gets you from point A to point B, but how can we monitor that system as we're going through the field and ensure that we're getting the desired outcome.
And Girish, I wonder if you have a perspective on that. You know, there was a headline in Bloomberg recently that said Waymo is 99% of the way to self-driving cars. The last 1% is the hardest. What are the sort of ultimate challenges that need to be realized to actually go to this sort of machinery where the operator can step away, as you said?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we've come up with a framework for thinking about this. The autonomous car people have their own levels of autonomy, and they're very much focused on the interaction between the driver and the car. We have similar levels of autonomy, but let me try to explain them to you. And I think they're very interesting and exciting. So the first level of autonomy, which is level one autonomy, which is where we are today, you know, where you have to have your hands off the equipment. Like, you don't need to drive the equipment, but you need to have your eyes on, right? So you can't take your eyes off. That's why, you know, the tractor companies will require the people to stay in the cab. The second level of autonomy, level two, which is where we can see Raven is trying to approach that now, is where you no longer need your eyes on the equipment. So eyes off. So the first level was hands off. The second level is eyes off. And that's where, you know, the equipment is more or less driving by itself. Maybe it gets into some kind of a situation where it stops and sends for a what we call an intervention, and then somebody has to go and rescue it. And I think we're approaching that slowly. There are some limitations, like you said. You know, what Waymo faces is basically, you know, all the uncertainty on the road. We feel that it's somewhat limited in a farm because you don't have other cars and people, and those are the things that are most uncertain. So in a farm with GPS, with the large equipment that basically can roll over most of the things, you can kind of create this, you know, cordoned off area where you can say, okay, well, nobody can come in here while the equipment is working. The equipment is big. It's making a lot of noise. Don't step in front of it.
Yeah, hope nobody comes through on a mountain bike or something like that. Yeah.
Exactly, right? The next level of autonomy, what we call level three autonomy, is where it starts to get really exciting. So level three is when we have one operator to many machines. Now, this is really game-changing, because if we can pull this off, then the size of the machine no longer becomes an issue. So if there's one operator that can monitor many machines, these machines could be smaller, and we now have a swarm of smaller machines that could be helping out. And then now, you know, we're all used to these big giant machines, and that's because we're trying to get optimized on that one farmer's time. But if we split that out, we might see a completely different set of options for farmers, where those machines are a lot cheaper to buy, they're much easier to replace and repair, and you have a much more decentralized system that is robust to the failure of a single machine. So level three is where we're kind of wanting to go. And then, of course, in level four is where, you know, it's fully automated and you can go to Mars and all of those things.
Wow. All right. So, yeah, with the robots that do their own repairing and everything. We'll set the science fiction aside for now. But, the vision of the future, then, what I'm hearing from you is, you know, a farmer who maybe has a fleet of lawn tractor-sized farm implements that they can control like drones. All right. We need to take a break. We're going to continue this conversation about agriculture and automation and the Farm Progress Show taking place this week in Decatur when we come back. Then shortly after the break, we're going to turn to a new book. It's called Justice Deferred, Race and the Supreme Court. We'll be speaking with Emeritus U of I Professor Orville Vernon Burton about that and his co-author Armand Derfner, who has argued civil rights cases for many years, including before the U.S. Supreme Court. Their book looks at the history of racial justice in the U.S. Supreme Court. That's all coming up after the break here on the 21st. As ever, you're invited to join our conversation. 800-222-9455 is the number. More to come. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. Whether you're just starting out or upgrading to your dream home, Busey can guide you every step of the way because they know there's no place like home. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about automation and the future of farming, pegged to the Farm Progress Show taking place this week in Decatur. We are talking about that with Dominic Wachis, who's with Raven Applied Technology, debuting some new fully autonomous implements at the Farm Progress Show this week. Also, Willie Vogt, editorial director for Farm Progress, and Girish Chowdhury, who's associate professor of ag and biological engineering and computer science at U of I Urbana-Champaign, also chief scientist at the Illinois Autonomous Farm. Willie, let me ask you, is there, a lot of what we've been talking about is sort of in the field automation. Is there automation coming online for the sort of livestock end of farming?
Actually, there is. We've had some stuff demonstrated to move cattle from place to place and stuff and tech like that, but it's less.
Oh my gosh, is that a robot cowboy? Come on.
No, we're not going to go to the robot cowboy. This is more about once the cattle is moved, an animal is moved in for some processing, for example, a vaccination or to be separated for weaning, those types of things. There's some work going on there. There are some interesting chutes that are fully automated when the animal moves in for treatment. It does all the work and then releases the animal automatically. But in terms of true automation, it's kind of hard to automate the range.
Yeah, hard to automate, right, because it's such a different, uncontrolled sort of environment, right? Hills right. And rocks and things like that, fences. All right.
One of the things about ag, I'll add real quick, is that
sure.
We have space. When you talk about automating in a building or even automating on a highway, that's one thing. But when you're talking about 500 acres, that's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. All right. Dominic, I wonder, can you talk about, and I don't know if, you know, pricing is something you discuss, but is this increasing automation in farming, is that, you know, potentially a barrier to some people being able to take part in this, these technological improvements? I got to imagine that these things come with a significant price tag.
Yeah. We find the price tag really varies based on where folks are at. And I think it's helpful in most conversations to really start with where the customer's at in their autonomous journey, as we like to refer to it. And we see multiple steps along that path. And, you know, based on the size, based on kind of the technology they're already using today, it can be very affordable to kind of move up a step in that process and really get to a higher level of automation on any farm.
So you're not necessarily jumping from, you know, the fully analog, if you will, tractor to the fully autonomous one, but there you say you take more baby steps, I guess.
Like most folks are interested in kind of a stair-step approach and really building that confidence in the next higher level of automation. And then as they, you know, kind of progress up the stairs, so to speak, we just see that gradually increasing.
So, Girish, let me ask you. You mentioned earlier these different sort of steps of, you know, or phases. I can't remember the exact phrase you use, right? But hands
levels.
Off, levels. Yeah, hands off, eyes off. What is the timeline for actually getting to that? At least level three. Set aside again the mission to Mars, but at least that level
Absolutely.
Three. What were we talking? Yeah. 5 years, 10, 20, 30? Do we know? Because it seems like with autonomous cars on the road, it's so complicated that you know, the self-driving cars keep getting pushed back. So, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I feel that agriculture will be the cradle of autonomy, right? This is where autonomy will grow up because we have these cordon of areas, like I said, and there's a lot of control that we have over these areas. There's no regulation that prevents from ground vehicles to being autonomous in private areas right now. So that's very promising. And I think the timeline that we're looking at is really, you know, less than 5 years, honestly. And, you know, the Illinois is one of the national AI institutes on agriculture now, the AI Farms Institute. And with that, and along with the number of companies that are in the research park, the large ones and startups, we have already seen products being rolled out that are getting closer and closer to level three autonomy. So I feel that, you know, within a few years, we'll try to get there. And then the second part that you said, that has been a pretty big focus of the work at the Illinois Autonomous Farm. So on the one side, like you always show this graph, on the one side, we want those levels of autonomy to increase, but on the other side, we want the prices to come down. And we feel AI is really a good way to bring prices down because we know that with AI, you can use simpler sensors like cameras to do things that were previously much harder to do. So, and as the size of the robot reduces also, which is a potential, that the prices come down. So the technology can be more accessible.
Yeah, interesting. All right. I think we have a caller on the line. Chris is calling in from Rantoul. Chris, thank you for calling in. Go ahead.
Hi. You know, Rantoul is building an automated track here with the University of Illinois. That will include some agricultural aspect to it for development of automated machinery. But I think my comment boils down to this. The pursuit of automation seems to me a very ivory tower professorial pursuit, as if it's just a math problem that's interesting. And I think that there are three costs to this that leap out at me. One is that automation always costs jobs. Two, that automation always proceeds unevenly and creates winners and losers. So it will probably lead to more corporate consolidation of farms. And three, I just hate to see humanity completely sever its ties to the land, the feel of soil under your fingertips.
Interesting. Yeah, a 10,000-year-old, at least, I may be off by a factor of 10 on that number, connection to agriculture and humanity. Thank you for the call, Chris. We appreciate that. I don't know. He mentioned sort of professors in ivory towers, Girish. I guess that you're out in the field, but you are a professor in your title. So what do you say to that?
Yeah.
Losing the connection to the land.
Well, I think one of the biggest difference between automation and autonomy that I teach in my courses is that autonomy is essentially something that is with the human in the mind. You cannot remove the human because we have this big myth in robotics, the substitution myth, where we can say that we can take the job of this one person and replace it with a robot and everything else stays the same. And that never happens, right? And so I think the point is correct that if we go to more autonomous, more automated things will change. And that is exactly what technology is about. Things do change. I mean, we have cars now that are made by machines and they are cheaper than the cars that were not made by machines. So I think going forward, there's also a massive labor crunch. And every time we talk to farmers, they complain about not finding people to work in the field. So I think it's, you know, we're trying to do what is good for the land too, because if you really look at it, with automation, we could enable more sustainable things that we're just not doing right now. So today, you know, we're spraying chemicals quite a bit more than potentially we should be. Like, we have the herbicide resistant weeds crisis, we have the hypoxia in the Gulf, and that's because we're trying to replace mechanical weeding, you know, which would be extremely labor intensive, with chemicals. So if we were to create mechanical weeding robots, I mean, imagine the amount of chemicals that we would save, and imagine the connection back to the land that you would get with that one farmer now controlling his robot tools. You know, I mean, to me, this is really not any different than a hammer or a wheel. It's just the wheel of the 21st century. And it's automated.
Yeah. Girish Chowdhury is chief scientist at the Illinois Autonomous Farm, professor at U of I Urbana-Champaign. We've also been speaking with Dominic Wachis, director of strategic initiatives for Raven Applied Technology, and Willie Vogt, editorial director for Farm Progress. Girish, Dominic, Willie, thank you all so much for being with us today on the 21st.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.